Let's go. Go.
Hello, my name is Rebecca Tapp, and this is the DNA of Purpose podcast, where we explore purpose as a part of who we already are. We showcase all inspiring stories of the most purpose-driven people on the planet with the intention of giving you the tools to step into the potential of who you were always born to be. After all, it's in your DNA. Hello and welcome to another episode of the DNA of Purpose podcast, proudly brought to you by Future Crunch. Our mission is to foster intelligent, optimistic thinking about the future and to empower people to contribute to it. As our regular listeners would know, over the last 97 episodes, yes, we are nearly at the century, we have spoken to industry leaders, activists, authors, and everything in between in order to explore the frontiers of technology, science, business, art, and design to ignite a more beautiful, hopeful, and purpose-driven world. The reason we do it is because if we want to change the story of the human race in the 21st century, we have to change the stories that we tell ourselves. And thus today, I am beyond excited to be speaking to yet again another incredible human being on the forefront of the amazing innovation that sits in the intersection of technology, impactful partnership, and of course, social purpose. His name is Jean-Philippe Courtois, and since commencing his career with Microsoft in 1984, he has spent more than four decades with a bird's eye view of the exponential explosion of technology. In that time, he has witnessed the emergence of one of humanity's greatest opportunities to ignite positive change in the world, and he has definitely been a core part of driving that movement forward. As the Executive Vice President and President, National Transformation Partnerships for Microsoft Global, JP, as he is also affectionately known, is focused on empowering countries' sustainable economic growth through digital transformation. He is also responsible for accelerating Microsoft's global investment in data centers, enabling governments, citizens, and businesses to leverage the world's largest and most trusted cloud infrastructure network. He is personally passionate about empowering purpose-driven individuals and organizations to achieve more for society, and is also the executive sponsor of the Microsoft Global Social Entrepreneurship Program, which empowers organizations doing good all over the world. Now, more recently, JP has also become an advocate for what is termed positive leadership. Now, positive leadership looks at how leaders can energize and inspire their teams to bring their very best by connecting their personal missions to their organization's purpose so that they can achieve a positive impact. As a result of this passion for positive leadership, he is also the host of an incredible podcast called The Positive Leadership Podcast, and he has interviewed some, you know, world-class game-changing leaders, including Satya Nadella, who is Microsoft CEO, Kevin Johnson, the CEO of Starbucks, and Vincent Stanley, who is the Director of Philosophy and Chief Storyteller at Patagonia. And look, that is just to name a few. So the podcast is definitely worth taking a listen. Now, outside of Microsoft, JP spends much of his time also working with the Live for Good Foundation, which he co-founded with his family in 2015. Live for Good aims to unlock the potential of young people from all walks of life through social entrepreneurship, driving societal innovation through a purpose-led community. So, today we dive into all of these things and so much more. Grab yourself your favorite beverage, kick back, and welcome to another episode of the DNA of Purpose podcast. John Philippe, welcome to the DNA of Purpose podcast. It is such a pleasure to have you beaming all the way into the studio from Paris. Thank you for joining me today.
Well, Rebecca, thank you so much for having me and spend this moment with you and your listeners, because I'm also in search of my own purpose. So looking forward to your own insights in our discussion as well.
I am looking forward to unpacking a subject we are both so passionate about across the course of today's conversation. Now, as a starting point, I want to kick off with a question that I ask many of my guests. As we were just discussing before the podcast, I've had the privilege to speak with some of the most purpose-driven leaders across the globe. And for that reason, I'm always curious to know if there is any one idea or trend that you have been thinking about recently that you believe will significantly empower human progress in the 21st century.
That's only a big question to start with, Rebecca. I would say, let me start saying, as a base, kind of my foundation, I'm an optimist, right? And I think at the time where the world can seem pretty dark, I've hope in the future. I hope in particular, I would say, in a new generation of change makers who have decided to act to make a better world. And in my personal life, what I've tried to do a lot more over the last years is to be intentional about, in a way, driving out more harmony, right, between my personal life, my social life, and our professional life as well. In many ways, I've been lucky because I've been busy in a great way, a meaningful way, both by working, at the core Microsoft transformation, but also at the inception of my own family foundation, Live for Good. And so as I've done that over the past several years now, I think it made me a lot more conscious about the way I need to evolve my leadership style to reflect and apply in many ways what is needed in such an evolving world. And as I did that, I studied, read, exchanged with a lot of people last decade. And I would say I become a big believer into what is called positive leadership. And, positive leadership is a school of thought, which started in academic circles with some very famous psychologists and professors like Martin Seligman, focused on positive psychology. And I think that the big moment of truth at the time, which was a couple of decades ago, was for the first time, psychologists were turning the coin, meaning, most of the time, shrimps were focusing on what's going wrong with you, why you depressed, and also, honestly, of course, helping people who are suffering, who are hurt in their lives. And for the first time ever, with the positive psychology, you have people, Martin Seligman, Barbara Fredrickson, and many others, who've been studying, actually, what is happening? What are the people doing to generate, drive positive energy and feel good about the moments they live in their life more often than they feel bad about some moments that hurt them? And I think to me that was really enlightening to read some of that research, but more importantly to see, I guess like you, people practicing it or people trying to bring into their lives what it means. And I've been myself trying to practice on that and be a lot more planful about the way I could create that those positive energies in my life to generate more moments of happiness, to generate as well a lot more clarity about where and with whom I want to spend time with. And that's why I've been also a lot more strategic in ways into those undertakings, either at Microsoft, with my family, friends, or with my foundation. And so to me, this is the reason why, Rebecca, at the end, I started, I guess, like you some time ago, you did just for me, it was a few months ago, I started this Positive Leadership Podcast series, and I've been talking to people like psychologists, Dr. Andre Tang, but also obviously my boss, Satya Nadella, CEO of Microsoft, Kevin Johnson, the leader of Starbucks, and many others. And I've been really thrilled to learn from them the way they've been also shaping some positive energy into themselves to carry others in their organization to achieve more.
JP, I had a very good listen to some of your episodes on positive leadership only this morning, and I'd highly recommend the podcast. I think there's so much to be said around that if we want to, you know, change the story of human progress in the 21st century, we need to change the story that we tell ourselves. And so much of the work you were doing and in the guests that you have interviewed for the podcast that I certainly listened to, that is very much your ethos. And yeah, so I'd highly recommend having a listen to your podcast.
Thank you so much. And Sam, on some of your great episodes as well, which I enjoyed.
Oh, look, I think we certainly, have a shared passion for both our purpose and positivity. And look, JP, I'm a very passionate researcher, and thus I have trawled the internet in order to understand more about what makes you the human being that you are today. There was obviously a library of information with regards to your career. However, I was left curious to understand more about who you are, your family, your foundations, and the essence of your character. And with that in mind, I was wondering what life was like for a young JP, and how did your youth influence who you were to go on and become?
Well, that's something that goes back a few years in my life. And it started really when I grew up in the south of France. And of course, I can imagine I'm biased, what is, I think, the most beautiful city on the planet, Nice, in the French Riviera. All the way, I love Sydney, I love many places in Australia. We say Nice, of course, has been and remains, as you can imagine, a very special place for me. Not just because of the location of Nice, because indeed, if you enjoy the waterside, swimming like I do, if you enjoy hiking or skiing in the mountains in the Alps, well, you've got it all. You've got it all in a beautiful setting, in a popular city too, where you've got really a very diverse population. And a city also that has a lot of history between France, Italy, and a lot more in the past. And in the city I grew up as well with a few patients. One of them, which I was certainly trying to, to get a dent into, is football. I mean, soccer for non-Europeans, but you mean what I mean, the real football, right? The real football. and I've been playing football when I was young, of course. The young JP was playing football. He loved it as a defender. And I became as well, of course, a big fan of the local professional team, the first league called OGC Nice, which is the team of our city. And as you can imagine, rooting for that team, even more when they come to visit Paris Saint-Germain in Paris, which is where I'm living. And so to share with you as well the confidence, I was even actually dreaming and thinking when I was 10 years old that I would become a professional soccer player one day. And I completely failed in that in that pursuit, but I certainly enjoyed a ton playing, and today also attending games. And what's funny, actually, I was discussing also with Satya, one of his passions, which actually he talked about publicly as well, where when he was a kid as well, he thought he could become a famous cricketer. And obviously he did not, but that has also really driven him in terms of the passion for the sports. Certainly as well, I believe in my case, and probably the same with Satya, is also all about the environment of coaching a team, assembling a team of talents. And you could bring your best game as a player for the team you are playing for. So with all of that, suddenly at one point, I do a fast forward. I moved up, as we say, to Paris. In France, we say you moved up to the capital city from the south. And this is when I joined Microsoft back in 1984 and suddenly been deeply engaged since then, both with Microsoft, but also with many other, I would say, ventures in my life. So, and a few years back, in 2015, I, with my family, my wife, two daughters, also created our own foundation called Live for Good, which is all about unleashing and revealing the potential of youth from all walks of life through social entrepreneurship. But I'm sure we may have an opportunity to discuss about that later, I guess.
Look, that is certainly on my list of questions, and I have many. Now, JP, you just mentioned that you commenced your career with Microsoft in 1984. Now, during that time, the world really experienced one of the greatest turning points known to humankind, and that was the emergence of the internet. And you were someone who was quite literally stood on a cliff with a bird's eye view of the exponential explosion of technology over four decades. Now, I imagine in that time you have witnessed, I guess, the emergence of one of humanity's greatest opportunities to progress. Yet at the same time, digitization has also exposed some of our vulnerabilities. I'm really curious to understand, what have you personally learnt about what it means to be human on that journey?
Wow, that's such a well-asked question, Rebecca.
It's a big one, I know.
Come on, I'm almost hesitating to dive into it, but let's give it a shot. I would say, you know, obviously I've been lucky, and I mean, what I'm using all the time with my teams or others, people I meet with, is privilege to meet with Microsoft 37 years ago in my life. And I, when I joined, actually, I was coming, it was my first job, from a very young French software startup company. So I got in love with software at the time where there was no PC industry. It was, you know, you are probably not even born, Rebecca, but that was the time of the Apple II. Mm-hmm. And then came the IBM PC, the personal computer. And I traded with that, basically a startup company called Microsoft in the south of France, in Nice, with accounting software. So basically, the dream of packaging software to bring into the hands of a lot more people compared to the old paradigm of IT, which was all in the hands of a few IT departments controlling access to data on mini computers and more. So that sounds like a century ago, but it was just a couple of decades ago. Since that day, you know, I've been lucky to go through all, I would say, the tipping points of the technology industry.
Yeah, what an extraordinary experience to have witnessed that.
Yeah, I mean, all the way from, you know, the PC creation, Windows, to the internet, to client server, to cloud and AI. And I would say, really, when I reflect as well on the big aha moments for me, in many ways, been always about what's driving us in our company at Microsoft. And again, you know, joining a company at the time, 1984, Microsoft, which was basically less than 600 people globally. Yes. And today we are 160,000 people. So we've been growing a bit. And at the time, really, there was such a strong sense of mission of the company. You know, it was obviously shaped by our founder, Bill Gates, who was talking about the contribution Microsoft could bring to the world to make sure that one day there will be a PC on every desk in every home. And of course, that really galvanized and crystallized the entire industry of basically coming up together with PC as a mainstream tool for humanity. And if I do a fast forward now, 7 years ago, when our third CEO came to the job, Satya Nadella, which of course I've been working with more than 20 years now, and Satya decided for the second time in our history as a company to come up with all of us with a second mission of Microsoft, which says we want to empower every person and every organization on the planet to achieve more. And as you know, as you pick those words one by one, it's really all about what technology can do for others. It's the way technology innovation can make people better at what they do, as a consumer, as individuals, as a teacher, as a business person, as a developer, as an NGO, you pick whatever scenario persona in the world, it's about really getting them to achieve more in their lives, professional, personal, social lives. And to me, that is so powerful to actually embed who you are, your values, and use that platform, as we love to say, to achieve more for people, for your customers, for the communities. And so that's really what I've been learning a ton and be excited about. And I've seen so many examples, again, of empowering technology, Rebecca, in the world.
Yeah, it's just extraordinary. And extraordinary to gain insights into the ways you've not only witnessed emerging technology, but from what you're saying, that counterintuitively, that is placing the focus back on these innate human skills, such as purpose, and in your case, positive leadership, which I now would love to understand a little bit more about. Now, what I want to talk about here is your ethos as a leader. I understand that early in your career at Microsoft, you had a meeting with former CEO Steve Ballmer that really showed the power of positive leadership. I'm wondering if you can share with me a little bit more about that experience.
Yeah, it's certainly one of those big learning moments, right, in your professional life. I would say my life as a whole. That was back in 1998. And it was a young, at the time, general manager for the French subsidiary, so leading the Microsoft France business for the company. And that was my first year as general manager. I'd just been promoted. And at the time, Microsoft, for decades, had a tradition, which was about really reviewing the businesses of the company by country, basically from A to Z. What I mean by that is we had a gathering where the leadership team, including the CEO of the company, in this case, Steve Ballmer, would come to the subsidiary. So in that case, that was in a small suburb outside of Paris at the time called Les Ulis. I'm not sure most of the people know where it is, but it's basically a 30 minutes drive southwest from Paris, where we were located as a subsidiary to start with Microsoft. And Steve visited us with the CFO, a couple of executives, and we spent like 15 hours, literally 15 hours, discussing about the health of the business in France. And it was a particular moment, Rebecca, because at the time, you know, Microsoft subsidiaries were very autonomous. And in a way, France took advantage of that by having actually higher prices. But Steve wanted us to align, which made sense. At one point, he wanted to be more consistent as a global company. And so I was presenting a business plan, a tough one, where I was supposed to kind of reduce the price by 40, 50%, right? It's radical. And yet, Steve shows some growth. Obviously, that was pretty impossible to do. At least I thought about it. And I spent tons of energy with my team, with tons of slides, trying to convince Steve that we had a plan, which we could make it work, da-da-da. But he had the meeting, you know, after, I don't know, hundreds of questions. I was so exhausted and I was coming to a mental point where I thought that I was done, right? And that probably as Steve was going to make his closing comments, he was going to tell me, hey, JP, I think you may want to do something else in your life.
Take a walk.
Seriously. No, seriously, because it had been a very intense day, respectfully, but super intense. And people who know Steve know he loves data. And I love data too, by the way, because I was growing up with a data culture. But at the end of the day, what happened is, as Tim was wrapping up, he said, Jean-Philippe, you know, I've asked you tons of questions, you and your team, and I'm going to tell you one thing. I trust you. I trust that you and your team are going to make a turnaround to that subsidiary, and that you're going to grow a share and lead this market. And I trust that because I'm confident in your capabilities. I think you have what it takes to lead the team. You've got the stamina, you've got energy, you've got a passion. And I know you have some hard problems to figure out, but I'm committed to your success. Wow. When we ended the day that day, I can tell you, it had such a profound impact on me. Not just because I had a job the day after, of course, but because I realized how much powerful were the words speak by Steve to give me such tons of energy. And of course, you could say it's a nice story to tell. A year later, I was showing some really nice numbers, turning around the business. But the confidence instilled in me, which to me is all about the way you have, first of all, self-confidence in yourself. You have to have some. That's the base for me. And of course, that's something I've been working on for all my life. But number two, the way you reinforce your self-esteem as well by having those deep connections, moments where you can recharge your energy by having and getting the feedback and welcoming the feedback to make you stronger and more prepared, that's something I've tried certainly to reflect on for the rest of my life.
Gosh, such a powerful moment in time. And there's so much to be said about the intersection between that sense of having someone deeply trust you and what it is to belong and feel like you belong to a culture and community, and how that enables you to really shine in whatever role it is that you're doing. It sounds like that was quite a significant moment for you.
It was indeed very, very unique. Yes.
JP, I understand that at the heart of positive leadership is academic research that focuses on the importance of positive emotions. It goes without saying that over the last 2 years, the world is in a period of rapid transformation. We have seen geopolitical change, social change, climate change, and of course, the global pandemic has led to the collapse of, I guess, everything that we thought we knew. The impact of this has led to a heartbreaking reality for many people all over the world. However, in the words of the great Swedish physician Hans Rosling, remember things can be bad and getting better. What I'd love to know is, how can we harness positive leadership to entice positive emotions as a pillar for hope and optimism, even in the face of a global crisis?
Well, another huge question, Rebecca. But by the way, yes, I mean, you like those very big questions, and I love them too, by the way. Hey, I like the reference to the late Hans Rosling. I read the book, actually, Factfulness, which
it's
I think is a great reading. A good one, because as I said before, Rebecca, I love facts. And as we all know, I mean, the news that are propagated either by people, social networks, media, is so much noise and so many times lack of facts that you need to ground yourself on sense of reality. I'm not saying everything is great, but there's so many positive facts around yourself. And that book is all about giving you the facts on, you know, poverty reduction of, you know, and certainly there's been tons done last 15 years, health price as well, et cetera, et cetera. And so anyway, that's a wonderful base. You know, when coming back to positive psychology, and I refer before to Barbara Fredrickson in a book I liked a lot, Positivity, you know, where she breaks down the science behind positivity. And she offers also some very useful tools, in a way, for all of us to apply in our life. And in essence, what she's saying, and I think what positive psychology is saying, is positive psychology is not about pretending again that the difficult things are not happening. They are happening for all of us in our lives. Mm-hmm. It helps us be more resilient when we face tough times, and to be a lot more, again, cognizant of the way your mind works and the way you want to actually be more deliberate about your thoughts, about your time, about your actions. I think it also a lot about the way you can articulate your bigger goals in life. And to me, this is also the way positive leadership can help achieve some extraordinary things. I spoke about it in my podcast conversation with Dr. Audrey Tang, you know, and when we discussed positive leadership together, it was really all about generating positive energy for ourselves and our team. And to me, this is about really, in a way, three circles that are connected. One is, the first circle is about yourself and the way you manage your own energy, emotional energy, physical energy, mental energy. The second circle you go to is the way you, based on that positive energy in yourself that you try to better shape and master, in a way, you are engaged in a lot more meaningful connections with others, people in your teams, in your family, friends, social circles, to truly be here at the moment for them and truly learn and engage to drive that positivity towards others. And the third circle is all about having an impact in the world, which to me goes beyond, of course, just the connections and the bonds. It is about the the intent we have in our lives to have this impact. Mm-hmm. And I think what we've seen across the through the pandemic is humanity is coming back strongly. I think all of us felt differently, of course, because a number of people had to go through super tough times. And I think all of us have understood through the crisis that, you know, at the end of the day, what provides human, what provides meaningful sense to our lives and to all of us is that human connection. And the lack of that human connection in real ways, of course, beyond digital deep meetings and Teams, which I love using myself, has been certainly a big, big, huge takeaway of the pandemic in the sense of searching for that deep, meaningful connection all the time. So, you know, just finishing on that, I would say myself, reflecting on the last 18 months and the way I've been working, I've been really changing my patterns. And in a way, I've been using some of the, you know, some of the limitations of that confinement at home to play to my harmony in my life. What I mean is, I could put in place finally, after traveling the world for 25 years over the place, some routines. Well, every morning I could exercise. I could plan every night a dinner with my family. I could even have some short walks nearby to the park. I could have calls with my coaching calls, my social entrepreneurs, because I decided to plan for that and to make the space for those meaningful connections in my life. Let me stop there, but that's really what drives me in terms of applying the positive leadership energy into the daily actions.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the focus on our personal energy, because in a conversation about purpose, I think we so often can consider it as being like the North Star, as in it's out there or in the future, rather than realizing that it's something that can happen right now in those, you know, tiny moments where we have an opportunity to be kind, to connect with somebody, to sit down and have that dinner with a member of our family. And I love your focus on purpose in the present moment as an energy, is something that we experience here and now.
I fully agree with you, Rebecca. And again, I think it was enlightening, I think, for all of us, and the way we could apply those principles through the pandemic and beyond, hopefully, okay, and beyond the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just for a moment want to bring the focus back to your work with Microsoft. With the amazing things happening in the world, I wanted to take a moment to explore the intersection between data and the potential for a more sustainable economy. In doing my research, I came across a talk that you did in 2019 at AI for Good. In that presentation, you made the connection between GDP and data. And I think it's fair to say that in many ways, data could be considered like the new oil, really. The great thing about data is that opposed to more traditional means of generating growth, it also has the most potential to solve some of the world's greatest problems. Do you think that the data economy has the potential to provide, in theory, I guess, a new kind of GDP that has the ability to improve the health of the economy and also our ecology? And if so, why would that be?
Well, that's another great question, Rebecca. And I think you're really talking about two things here, right?
Yeah.
One is how a data-driven economy can drive growth. How is that data factor playing into the broad economy? And the second question is about how do we ensure that growth can be sustainable? It can be inclusive as well. So, and then we can measure certainly growth beyond GDP. You know, certainly the pandemic has shown that no country in the world, right, no organization is 100% resilient. I mean, so many examples around the world. There's also proven that digital infrastructure and services, you know, based and growing rapidly on the cloud and on the data platform through AI, are critical to ensure that what you could call the foundational critical services for a country, like healthcare, hospitals, you know, food, retail, logistics, banking, could keep going on. And certainly something we've been as a company, Microsoft, deeply involved with, to make sure that those essential services could keep working to maintain, I would say, the common good of the countries. But I think there's certainly a lot more we can learn from that. And we know, first of all, that you know, not all countries have equal resources and access. Mm. And tell me, as a company, Microsoft, we want to help every country on the planet, not just the largest one, but every country to transform. And actually, it's really one of my main focus in my current mission, is helping partnering to transform national economies by leveraging our cloud and AI infrastructures, data infrastructure, to truly help a country achieve its potential. And to do that, we are engaging in four different dimensions at the country level in the world. The first one is truly about the way we digitally transform public sector, governments, and the most important industries in the countries. When you think about Australia, your country, right? Mm. We've been partnering deeply with the government of Australia on healthcare, on the vaccination campaigns, but also on the fundamentals of the social institution in Australia. We've done the same as well with the financial services and enabling against some of the largest banks in the countries and retail to digitally transform. The second dimension is really contribute with government leaders, with NGOs, academic circles on the condition of success of data in the countries. Mm. This is really all about policies, standard, thoughtful ways to have basically a meaningful AI. As you know, there's a lot of debates about the good or the bad AI in the world, and you have an opportunity to shape that. So that's the second dimension. The third one is really all about skills, skills, skills. At the end of the day, it's about offering a chance to every person in the world to be skilled enough or highly skilled to be an active participant in this digital and data society. And the last dimension is all about picking a cause that will be critical to the sustainability of the country. And of course, you know, the climate challenge we have in the world is a commonality we have in many parts of the world. And so that's the reason why we are involved in so many countries in the world with our Microsoft Cloud for Sustainability and many initiatives where we partner with, again, institutions and enterprise to help them transform to a more, I would say, low carbon and zero CO2 footprint in a business. So that's, in a way, the way I think about that data economy, driving GDP growth as well, Rebecca, and the way it can help us building a more inclusive economy. And we have many examples as we expand our data center footprint. One of the last ones in my mind is Indonesia, as an example, mm-hmm. where we've been really engaged deeply to, as an example, collaborating with an NGO called water.org to provide, you know, 240,000 people in Indonesia access to clean water and sanitation.
Amazing.
And helping new problems as well to moms and young children so that they can really have a better access, I would say, to education, health services in their lives. So a lot of more stories which are really, exciting for our people, myself, as we do our jobs across the world. And that's really what's driving us.
Amazing, JP. Look, in your answer then, you highlighted some of the core themes around, you know, ethical AI, and that includes, you know, coded bias and the need for human accountability in software development. We are living in a world where it's not a question of can we create the next technological innovation, because let's face it, most things are now possible. The real question is, should we? What are the implications? And with that in mind, how should we go about making these critical decisions, decisions that will fundamentally influence the lives of generations to come? What are your thoughts on this subject?
You know, really, your question, Rebecca, made me think about my last podcast episode with Vincent Stanley.
Yeah.
Vincent Stanley, I don't know if this name, rings a bell with your listeners, but he's the director of philosophy of a well-known company, Patagonia. You know, Patagonia is this company created by Yvon Chouinard that started by building pitons, right, for climbers. Mm.
And Patagonia is incredible.
Yeah, and it has become, as you know, one of the iconic, what is called B corporations. So those companies that have decided to apply the highest standards in terms of social, environmental accountability, responsibility. And Vincent, who's been in this company forever, truly, with the founder, has been really shaping a lot of that responsible company, those responsible company attributes. Even actually wrote a book, which I advise your listeners to read. And that responsible company is all about making us reflect about our commitment to the community, to the places where we operate, we live with our people and companies around the world. And so when it comes to Microsoft as a tech company, as a cloud AI company, we decided to engage deeply on the sense of innovation, on the purpose of innovation. And when it comes to that in particular, you know, we've worked and engaged with many institutions across the world, many circles, to come up with six principles that we are really trying to bring to life in our work to make those data a lot more accessible, inclusive, and fair. Those principles are the following. First of all, it's about reliability and safety. That's the foundation, because if you don't have reliable and safe access to data, you are going nowhere. And then on top of that, we've got four critical principles, which are all about fairness. How do we make sure the algorithm that we're going to create or our customers are going to create are fair? And how do we define fairness? Inclusion, of course. How do you make sure that a mix of developers, of tech people you use, reflect the diversity of the world that you are living into? Otherwise, guess what? Your algorithms are going to be very biased. It's about transparency as well. How do you make the code basically that has been produced, developed, accessible to, in a way, audit, if needed, the reliability and the intent of the code? And last but not least, accountability. Who is accountable? You cannot say, oh, it is the algorithm which is accountable. No, there are people, there's a company behind it. And so those are principles we are trying to bring to the table, Rebecca, to guide our customers, to guide developers, government as well, to be a lot more principles when it comes to build that inclusive data economy.
Incredible. Now, JP, I know that, you know, Microsoft is partnering with some incredible change-making organizations to create positive impact in the world. But I know also that you and your family run a charity called Live for Good, which also has a focus on inspiring young people to change the world via entrepreneurial endeavors. Now, I'd love to hear more about that, but I'd also love to hear a little more about Gabriel, who this charity is dedicated to. Can you share with me a little more about Live for Good and also the significance of Gabriel's legacy in the purpose of you and your family?
Yes, Rebecca. My wife Pascal, my daughter is Aurora Roman, created back in September 2015 what has become Live for Good. And to be honest, this name was given to us by Gabriel, my late son. And this name was actually the name of the website he put together when he was 18 years old to basically raise some money to help some philanthropic initiatives on building habitats for people in needs in Malaysia, where he had done some work to help those communities. And so that was just a website. But in many ways, his website was all about his deep values. Gabriel always felt he was a privileged kid, given the fact, you know, he grew up with my family, myself, taking care of him, but having access to many things that many other kids would not have access to necessarily. And he was always looking, and that's actually a personal note he sent me. He said, I have this vital desire to help others, to positively help others' lives. And what it means is really going intentionally after people who need the most to get them in a better place. And with such a legacy, where the four of us decided to honestly to give us a North Star, talking about North Star again, was to pick an initiative and to create a foundation for that purpose called Live for Good, where we could really bring our best as a family, and then with many others, of course, joining us in the course of that foundation, to unleash the potential of young people, less than 30 years old, from all kind of backgrounds, people coming from suburbs, people who've graduated, people who have disabilities, people who could be refugees and others, but who have in themselves also this vital desire to have a positive impact on the world. And we decided to say, hey, let's go talk, engage, identify all those kids in France and give them a chance to be a player, an active participant by creating their own social enterprise. And so the mission of Lead for Good is to truly support and accompany those entrepreneurs. We have cohorts of 50 entrepreneurs per year, where we basically start with an idea to change the world. And then at the end of the year, we help them starting creating a social business startup that is going to not just hire people, but is going to have a positive impact, whether it is on, you know, plastic recycling, whether it is social inclusion. It could be about bio, organic food. You know, it could be about human rights. And it's all about, again, driving them, helping them to achieve that. The last example I could just share with you, there are so many fantastic stories, is one of our last awardees of what we call the Prix Gabriel, where every year we give an award to six of the best entrepreneurs. And this is a young lady called Alix Mujar. She's a social worker by background. What she did is basically helping others, particularly young people with problems, problems with violence, problems of abuse, all kinds of issues. And one day she was exposed, her name is Alix. Alix was exposed to to really a traumatic experience where she was in charge of, 30 young boys in a boarding school, and where one of them was abusing some of the kids. And that boy came to her. That boy asked for help. And of course, she immediately asked for support to her supervisor because she was like 21 years old, right? I mean, and she was just starting her career. Mm. And what happened, fast forward a few months later, the same boy came to her and said, Alix, you let me down. And she said, what? And he said, you let me down. No one helped me. And that depressed her so much that she quit. She went home. She had depression for a couple of months. But then she decided never, ever again that. And so what Alix decided to do was to create a social enterprise. She submitted her idea to Lead for Good that is called Edition Déclic, like clicks, right? Where she's basically designing and publishing board games and awareness tools to educate youth and others on the way to prevent social issues. And now she has a network of like 500 ambassadors. I was on a TV show with her recently. And it was so, you know, fulfilling just to hear her, that she could have never dreamed about becoming an entrepreneur before, because she has no sense of accounting, of business, whatever. But she had this incredible vital force in herself to make it happen. And we're going to help her all along the way. So that's, as you can hear my voice, that's what gets our family so passionate about what Lead for Good does. And we have been supporting more than 260 entrepreneurs now across the countries, and we want to do a lot more. And obviously all of that is fueled as well by positive leadership, training, support, development of all those kids all along the years, with many volunteers helping us from all the business world, all the NGOs world as well, connecting as one community to help them achieve more.
Oh, JP, that is such incredible work. And I want to say to you, thank you for joining me on the podcast. I feel so incredibly inspired by this conversation. My mission in this podcast has always been to amplify the voices of people who are changing the world. And I feel truly honored and privileged to have had this conversation with you today. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing, not only with Microsoft, but also with Lead for Good in sharing your light and helping so many other people find theirs. So I know your time is precious, but I so appreciate the time you have spent with me. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. Again, I enjoy so much our discussion. I enjoy so much as well your own force to really drive purpose across many of our listeners, your listeners, to drive a better place in the world. And I like, of course, to share all my gratitude and many sympathies for many of my friends in Australia. So all the best.
well, when we can fly again, you'll have to come and visit us. You would be very welcome here.
Let me come back to a wonderful country. So thanks so much, Rebecca. Have a great day. And to all the people listening to us as well.
Thank you so much for joining me on the DNA of Purpose podcast. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you would like updates on upcoming episodes as they are released, in addition to good news posts from the world of science and technology, please follow along at our Instagram page, which is at DNA of Purpose Podcast, or sign up to our newsletter at futurecrunch.com. You can also download our brand new ebook on the Great Transformation, which is available at our website. And these links are also included in the show notes. You can think of the Great Transformation document as your field guide to the next economy.